climate change is laying bare issues of inequity and injustice. Those least responsible for climate change are the most vulnerable to its impacts. As the global community responds to climate change, how can we ensure that climate action is aligned with the rallying cry heard all over the world for a more equitable and just future? You're listening to Friday Podcast from the Wilson Center's Environmental Change and Security Program. I'm Lauren Reese, and in today's episode, we hear from Vanessa Nakate, a Ugandan climate activist who founded the Rise Up climate movement to amplify the voices of activists from Africa. Vanessa is a contributor to a new project we've launched with our partners at Adelphi called 21st Century Diplomacy, Foreign Policy is Climate Policy. Vanessa, I'm so delighted to be talking to you today. I'd love to start by hearing your story. Can you tell us a bit about the path that you've taken to become a widely recognized climate activist?
My journey of activism started in 2018. That is when I felt the need to do something that would cause change in the lives of the people in my community and country at large. So I started to carry out research to understand the challenges that they faced and to see how best I could help them. And when I realized that climate change was one of the worst that they were facing, I took it upon myself to read about it, to understand its impacts, to understand its causes. And for the first time, I got to realize that everything I was seeing in the news in regards to the landslides, to the floods, to the droughts in my country, they had a connection with climate change that I didn't know. At that point, I made a decision to do something about it, to join the climate movement and to become a voice. And my very first climate strike was in the first week of January 2019. And yeah, here we are now. It's over a year now. And with other activists in my country, we are doing everything we can to hold governments accountable and to demand for climate justice.
You were a student when you started seeing the impacts of climate change on your community. And so you began doing research to see where you could make a difference. And that's where you sort of landed on climate change. Is that right?
Yes. That was almost towards my graduation because I graduated in January.
Oh, okay. Was this just something that you decided to do on your own or was it part of a school initiative?
Oh, I decided to do it on my own.
Really? Okay. And so you mentioned some of the impacts related to weather that you were seeing from climate change. Can you talk a little bit more about that and where you see these impacts in Uganda and your community of Kampala?
In my country, Uganda, many people are at the front line of the climate crisis. And my country being one that heavily depends on agriculture for the economy and also for many families, especially those in rural communities, the changing weather patterns are a danger to us because they are causing shorter and heavier rainy seasons and longer and hotter dry spells. So you find that there are communities that are experiencing extreme droughts, and this affects the food that has been grown. This affects the water sources, leading to water scarcity. And in the case of short and heavy rainfall, we see so much flooding, even in the city of Kampala. It's quite dangerous to walk in Kampala city, in the middle of the city, I should say, after a heavy downpour, because you could step in a ditch and the next time they see you, you're already gone. Yeah, so I saw these impacts and I was relating them to what I had read. This year, while people were trying to stay at home and trying to survive the pandemic, the water levels of Lake Victoria rose and they submerged people's homes, they submerged people's farms, they submerged people's businesses. So people had to deal with two crises at the same time. When I talk about climate justice, it is not something that I want for the future. It is something that I want right now because our present is catastrophic and many people are facing challenges of having access to food and access to clean water.
You know, I found it really interesting that one of the issues you focused your 21st Century Diplomacy article on was the need to address ecocide in international law. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about where you see the connections between climate justice and addressing ecocide.
I think that we can really hold governments, corporations accountable if we have ecocide considered as an international crime. The race against justice is a race to save people's lives, is a race to save animals, is a race to save ecosystems. Every activity that is contributing to CO2 emissions is leading to many people's death, is leading to many people's suffering, is leading to many people's pain. Young people, girls, women, and everyone else who is so vulnerable to the climate crisis is being affected because of the decisions of the few. You realize that around 100 corporations are responsible for 71% of global emissions. So I think that we should move from just talking about how bad they are destroying our home, our planet, to actually holding them accountable. So that if a fossil fuel company knows that they are drilling or extracting oil and they're harming people's lives, then the international court can hold them accountable because that will be considered as ecocide. That is why I think it is important to have ecocide considered as an international crime. It is a crime against humanity. It is a crime against ecosystems. It is a crime against our lives. It is a crime against the present and the future. We cannot compromise resources for the future generation.
As a Ugandan climate activist and one of the most recognized voices coming out of the climate movement from Africa, you've done an amazing job at communicating the importance of representation in the climate movement. But of course, we know Africa is not a single homogenous group of countries. There's vast diversity in culture, history, politics, geography, and otherwise across the countries, but also within countries on the continent. So how do you balance your role on the international stage with your recognition of the importance of diverse representation?
I love that question because it gives me an opportunity to talk about embracing diversity in the climate movement. I believe that every activist has a story to tell, and every story has a solution to give, and every solution has a life to change. I also believe that we will not have climate justice if it is non-global enough, if it leaves out specific communities. We have seen communities that are impacted the most by the climate crisis, communities in the global south, communities of Black people, communities of indigenous people are facing the wrath of climate change. That is why I believe that the voices that are speaking up from those communities, they deserve to be platformed, they deserve to be listened to, because if we do not listen to them, we will not know the urgency of the crisis in their communities. So I think that people need to understand that the climate movement is not led by specific groups of people. This is a movement that is being led by different voices. I believe every activist out there is a leader because they are trying to drive change. They are trying to transform their communities. They are trying to build resilience in their communities. So they deserve to be listened to. We cannot have climate justice without racial justice. We cannot have climate justice without social justice. We cannot have climate justice without gender equality. So all these things are interconnected. Everyone needs to understand the intersection of these challenges. And the moment we understand that intersection, we will be able to achieve the justice that we need. If there is no environmental justice, then there is no climate justice.
You're not just speaking at international fora and lending a voice to your community. You've also launched a project to bring solar power and clean cooking to schools. Can you tell us about that project and what prompted you to focus on schools?
Last year, I started that project of installing solar panels and eco-friendly or clean cooking stoves in schools. I wanted to drive a transition to renewable energy, especially in the rural schools. We talk about all these solutions, but the truth is that not everyone is able to access them. Not everyone is able to afford them. So choosing these schools is an opportunity for them to receive these installations at no cost at all, because we need the transition. And if we can be able to drive this transition without the people receiving it having to pay anything, then I believe that we can do it. And that is why I started that project. And when it comes to the clean cooking stoves, in my country, Literally 90% of the schools depend on firewood for preparation of food. That means many trees are cut down. That means that our ecosystems are being destroyed. And of course, I have talked to some of the teachers and they tell me that they do not have alternatives. Yeah, the students have to eat. No one can study on an empty stomach. But the only way they can eat is by cutting down a tree, getting firewood and preparing food. While in other schools, you find that it is the students who carry this firewood themselves every day to school. It's like your ticket to enter in the classroom. You should come with a piece of firewood. And this is what I wanted to change. I wanted to make sure that we reduce on the amount of firewood that the schools use in a term. Wanted to make sure that the schools transition to renewable energy. And also I wanted to ensure that the education of these students is improved. There is no reason for a school in Uganda not to have light, not to have a clean cooking stove. Many of these schools, you find that they don't even have access to any form of light. And this makes education very difficult for the students. So through this project, education is improved, and also not just education, even climate education. It is an opportunity for me, for other activists who I work with, to ensure that the students understand their role in protecting our planet, how they can use their voice, how they can transform the world, regardless of how young they are, regardless of where they come from. So it is an opportunity to inspire and empower them to be able to take part in transforming our world and making it a better place.
I love that. I mean, I think it's incredibly impactful to have somebody like you show them what action means on the ground, but also how to communicate that in international fora that not everybody has access to, right? So being able to make those links is really incredible. I mean, I think that one of the unique things about your story is how quickly you saw a need and decided to take action and how bold that feels, right? There was nothing, there was no hesitation on your part. Where does that come from?
Honestly, I don't know. I just think that if it is to come from somewhere, I just feel really bad seeing people suffer and I feel really bad seeing people's livelihoods destroyed. I don't know how I could sleep if I didn't have a meal that day. I don't know how I would live if I didn't have access to water. So realizing that there are millions of people who are struggling to get this water, who are struggling to even have just one meal a day, it is enough to keep me fighting. It is enough to keep me going to the streets and demanding for action. Because at the end of it all, I'm looking towards getting justice for those who have already lost their lives to the climate crisis, getting justice for those who are facing the impacts of the crisis right now, and also to get justice for the coming generations so that they can walk into this planet with a happy smile, knowing that Vanessa did something about the planet and other millions of activists did something for us and they prepared a beautiful home for us.
So I think deep empathy might be your superpower, Vanessa.
Yeah.
So what to you, what does successful climate action look like over the next 4 to 5 years? I love how you focus on the present. This is not just a conversation about the future. It's about what we need to be doing now. And so if we were to have this conversation in 5 years and we're looking back, where do you think you would point to as success in moving us forward?
I think the success would really come from the decisions that our leaders would make. And right now we are seeing our leaders promising us that they are going to take action. But the next thing you know is that they are opening up new coal power plants. The next thing you know, they are investing billions of dollars in the fossil fuel industry. The next thing you know, they are bailing out corporations. So I think if I had this conversation again in the next 5 years, the success would be that the leaders are not doing what they're doing right now, meaning they are not investing in fossil fuels, meaning they are not bailing out corporations, meaning that they are doing everything they can to protect our life support systems, to protect the animals, and to protect the people. What I would call successful climate action would be also seeing resilience in communities that are being affected the most, and also listening to those voices, because we are not seeing that in many spaces right now.
Is there a particular space that you're thinking about where you think that those voices could be better represented in decision making?
I just think that those voices from marginalized communities, affected communities, communities that are facing the impacts right now, I think the best place where these voices can be listened to is the place where decisions about the planet are taking place. They need to be on those tables. And not just being on those tables, they need to be listened to. And even the weight of their voices should be high. It is one thing to invite them on those tables where decisions are being met, and yet their say doesn't carry much. So we need more weight on the voices of the people who are most affected by climate change.
Vanessa, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for taking the time today and for your leadership, both at the local level all the way up to the COPs. We're really appreciative of all of your amazing work. Thank you so much.
It was a pleasure, Lauren. Thank you.
You've been listening to Friday Podcast from the Wilson Center. Thanks for tuning in. For more information, follow us on Twitter at New Security Beat and visit newsecuritybeat.org.